Welcome to the Trauma Informed Lens podcast. Each week, Matt, Kurt, Jerry, and the occasional special guest explore how the trauma informed paradigm challenges traditional beliefs and approaches concerning a wide variety of areas. This podcast addresses psychological trauma in an educational manner and is not designed to replace mental health treatment. If anything in this podcast makes you feel uncomfortable or anxious, please talk to a mental health professional.
Welcome, friends, to episode 66 of the Trauma Informed Lens podcast. I'm back here today with Kurt and Jerry for our end of the year, New Year's special. So this is going to serve for both the podcast for Christmas week and New Year's week this week. So we're just wrap it all up in one here. And our second annual kind of look back at the year that was and look ahead to the year to come. So last year, I take credit. My hope for 2018 was we'd get a big celebrity on board on the movement. And I was thinking George Clooney, but we even got Oprah, which is one better. So I feel a little nervous of my prediction this year. So, but we should have some fun and just kind of a way to sit back and reflect sort of about our experience, where we've sort of seen the trauma-informed movement go, and some of the things that we'll be looking for moving into next year as well. The first week in January, we'll sort of get back to our heart rate variability series as well. So if you're tuning in, wondering if we're going to talk about nerdy articles, we'll be back with one very soon. So I got a lot of great feedback on that series so far. So I just kind of want to start out just kind of thinking back to the year that was. I think a lot, or at least in my experience, it seemed like there was some big shifts. And I think this has been happening for a few years, but you know, I just am fresh off the National HIV Conference in DC. And I've been going to this thing now for probably about 10, 11 years. And, you know, back when I first started, nobody was talking anything about ACEs or trauma-informed. And now it was hard to find a presentation without trauma-informed at least being mentioned, which I just think is kind of a good barometer for where this movement's going and how far it's spread. So I just, as we think back to the year that was, as we kind of close out 2018, you know, Jerry, let me start with you. Just whether it's kind of from our podcast and our discussions or your experience out there on the road, just kind of some of your impressions of the trauma-informed movement. What have you kind of seen? What are some big things that stick out to you that you've seen in your work?
Good question, right? So both positive and negative for me. On the positive side, I think that there's certainly been an increased awareness in the general population of mental health, education, corrections, and in the community of trauma and the impact it has on children's development, on children's behavior, and on relationships, you know? So I, you know, after being involved in this for 100 years, maybe a little less, but it's really nice to see that people have in some ways adopted a framework that includes this. Mm-hmm. On the negative side, there's been a couple of things that I've kind of noticed, especially as I talk to schools. One is that when they talk about or want to learn about trauma, they tend to really want a solution for the most difficult kids, as if rest of the kids in the class or in the school aren't experiencing trauma, only those kids that are acting out. And I think that that's one of the downsides of a trauma-informed, is really not really initially getting that it's a system-wide way of thinking about optimizing learning for all children and optimizing the capacity for relationships and for all children, as my dog agrees with me. The second thing I think is somewhat is after doing this for years, trauma is an extremely complex process, and it takes a lot of knowledge, it takes a lot of energy, and it also takes a high level of expertise to deal with traumatized individuals. And one of the things I see when there's a movement, as you described it, is there's people who get on board, who read a book or read a number of books, and then go out and are talking about it, training other people, really beginning to, in some ways, it becomes generic, and it gets diluted in some respect. And so I think there's this balance between wanting everybody to increase awareness, increase sensitivity, and increase responsiveness, at the same time of not kind of minimizing how complex trauma is and how difficult it is in some ways to stay connected and actually see and understand the person that's sitting in front of you. And that's a really difficult thing to ask teachers, to ask case managers, to ask people who are dealing with multiple either children or adults, or to do it, to really invest that level of involvement in that. And so I would think that the most important thing for people in those is to really work to not to re-traumatize their clients, right? Not necessarily fix them or in some ways heal them, but really not to in some ways, the way they interact is not to re-traumatize. So I've seen over this last year a balance between both excitement about the movement and also some concerns as I travel around and people saying, because it's the in thing to do, everybody is trauma-informed these days.
Yeah, we're with the cool kids now. You know, it used to just be the nerds, like in the background. You meet and a few other people chat about this. I remember we met like in 2005. I get some people together for breakfast or at that Mexican restaurant, and you know there were like six of us at the table. And you know, it's interesting. And Kurt, I want to get your opinion on this too. But you know, I've had a few interesting interactions. One is, you know, and it's kind of one of my pet peeves, though I don't get too upset about it, is when folks say we're trauma-informed, like we've arrived. And I think just our discussion on heart rate variability, I've got so much more to learn, and I consume everything I can on this topic. And it's like, well, we're trauma-informed because we had a half-day presentation on the topic. And I'm like, you know, and I had another person ask me, what well-meaning question for a podcast that I was on is, well, you don't really have to be training to do trauma-informed care. You don't have to have training in trauma. And I was kind of taken back the question. And then, you know, my answer to that, well, there is the informed part to it. Yeah, you can implement a best practices without understanding trauma. And so I feel what Jerry's saying is, you know, it's, you know, and if it's watered down versus nothing, I still think, you know, there's some benefit that we've got this shared language, you know, that we're doing this, but it is a little, you know, there's times where I'm holding my breath to say, man, I hope you've got really what you need to raise that flag of, hey, we're trauma informed now. Kurt, I kind of wonder I'd love to get your thoughts on this as somebody who's out there on the ground, talking to a lot of providers and doing some of that work yourself.
I was thinking kind of about this question that you had sent out to us last night and kind of have a similar reaction to Jerry's in that it's a really big question over the course of a year, like trying to look back and go, like, how would I distill down things that I've learned or things that I view as themes over the course of the last year. It's a nice exercise in kind of being reflective and taking a minute to do that. And it's also really difficult to pick two or three or five, you know, there's so many things that happen on a day-to-day, a moment-to-moment basis. And I was thinking about a couple of conversations that I had related to both clinical work with individuals, whether they're traumatized or not. And I think one thing I kind of think about is that it might have been a slight disadvantage for trauma to be associated to some of what we're doing, and that it's not necessarily just about trauma, as Jerry alluded to. Like, this is like, I mean, maybe neurobiologically or neurodevelopmentally informed care may have been, like, you know, a better moniker to attach to it, you know. But so I was having this conversation with a group of clinicians and in a couple of other forums with some kind of younger organizational leaders. And one of the questions I asked was, what is the number one job of a leader? And of course, this is in the context of kind of a trauma-informed leadership approach and trauma-informed work approach. And most people gave me answers like, it's some blend of motivating people and establishing accountability, things like that, that's the job of a leader. And I kind of wanted to challenge the group a little bit. And I think this is where the real difficulty lies in application. And my opinion was that the job of a leader was to first be self-aware, to second be self-reflective, and use those two things to engage in critical thinking. That's your job as a leader, and that will result in good accountability and good motivation and good leadership of your people. And I think the more that I see both from intervening with those who experience extreme behavioral disorders and extreme symptoms related to their traumatic histories, and in terms of organizations that become easily hyper-aroused and stressed and under-resourced, both of those kind of create this collection of symptoms that make it really hard to be self-aware and self-reflective and continually engage in critical thinking. And either way you're doing, thinking about it from an organizational standpoint or from an intervention standpoint, that seems to be something that pops out at me as a real challenge for the application at that level. So that's kind of my initial thoughts. And you know, those three things are except being self-aware, self-reflective, and engaging in critical thinking are things that I learned from Jerry. Those are words that he used to tell me a lot. And so it's interesting to see that kind of happen again now, like that I'm doing it and I'm going through, and it's probably just as big a problem. Maybe I was one of the more difficult ones that Jerry had to teach that to. But I find it like all the time, everywhere I go, constantly. And it's also something I have to put effort into myself. And that's challenging.
Yeah. You know, I would add, I think mine really builds upon your two's, because I would agree. Again, I've had a lot of the same experiences, especially seeing how widespread this has gotten. You know, the other thing that I'm interested in that I'm starting to see, and I think this is a good place to be when you talk about kind of the life cycle of a movement, is the real, but I think it presents challenges, Kurt, is kind of what you're saying as well, is the need to have some structure of how to move forward to integrate knowledge into practice. You know, in some ways, I think, you know, the journey, I like to think, again, a trauma-informed is a journey and not a destination, is, you know, you learn and then you sort of just, you know, you have a quality improvement process. You know, you learn something, you use what you learn as a mirror to hold up to what you currently are doing and make adjustments, study those adjustments to see if they're successful, adjust, and sort of do that. So on one way, it's not rocket science, though getting human beings to change behavior is never an easy thing to do, especially in an organizational context. So on one hand, it seems, you know, that there's a simplistic way to start to take that journey and take some of the practical steps. But the other thing I think I've really appreciated, and I think I got this pretty early on, and maybe some of that's my training in the leadership piece and realizing how complex leadership leadership is you know, yeah, taking a half day training gives you some knowledge to hold up that mirror. But I think the other thing, when we think about trauma-informed sort of environments, it does hit, Kurt, as you were saying, we need good leadership. We need reflective leadership, supportive supervision. Some cultures don't have any supervision or time set aside to do any of that. I'm starting to rant in the medical community about, you know, how we oftentimes don't give nurses any level of supervision, or medical providers, you know, some of the highest rate professions for burnout that's mm-hmm. out there. And so when you think about self-care, when you think about leadership, you know, a trauma-informed care becomes a much more, it's a deeper, I don't want to say it's necessarily complex, but it's a deeper thing than just taking a half-day training and trying to integrate that knowledge. So I like that we're getting to these operationalizing what this is. But I always like think about what Kurt, you and Jerry, or at least my perception of what you guys did at a treatment center is, you know, how you guys operationalized a lot of this is bringing Jerry in for significant periods of time. And I think it shows, you know, a lot of people are trying to do that with a lot less internal capacity around this. So when you think about a school district implementing this at all levels, or even a health center or a system, you know, that there is a depth to this that is more than just, hey, let's not re-traumatize folks. That's obviously part of it. But when you really dig into what I think, you know, the different components of a trauma-informed environment is, you know, it is taking a look under a lot of different rocks to making sure, again, you create a good leadership, strong self-care practices, and that care is delivered in that environment.
You know, the thought about leadership, right? So how difficult leadership really is. And, you know, you've talked about having to be able to be self-aware and self-reflective, having the ability to see the people that you're responsible to lead, having to hold the organization's goals, right? Those are all layers that leadership has to kind of manage. And in some ways, having some distant vision of where we're going to, right, is oftentimes the people who are actually doing the work, they are so in the what I got to do today, or maybe what I got to do for a week within this week. The leader really has to have a foot in the present and a vision in the future to kind of look at that piece. And in order to do that, we really have to, one is be well-regulated, right? And in some ways connected to ourselves to be able to do it. But I also think we have to balance out, as, you know, my own challenge, as I study more about trauma and I study, is how do I keep all this information in my head, but really be open to being with the person I'm with, as opposed to having this information kind of organize the person I'm with, right? And so there's a really good part about having these theories or having this knowledge, but there's also a danger that you miss seeing the person in front of you. And I think that's always the challenge you have. If you don't have anything that organizes you, you just go wherever the system wants. If you're too contained, which is what I think has been the nice part over the year of us having these discussions, is that you guys bring a very different lens to the same problems that I see, that both help me recognize when my kind of internal mental model is maybe getting in the way of me seeing the whole picture, right? Is that when you're with other people, think differently, it helps you to separate between what the issue is and what maybe I'm bringing to this process. So that I think that's a really important part of individuals who are bringing somebody in, you really need multiple perspectives of the same situation, which is what a good leader will do, is create a space for people to share their particular view, and then we figure out is how do we integrate that to get the best possible solution to the situation. So this has been a really nice year of both me reinforcing and growing in my own thinking, but also I've been challenged to begin to say is how can I look at this from a different perspective?
Mm-hmm. I find that to be such an interesting experience. I resonate with it because it happens to me frequently after I've talked to either or both of you. And often there's a delayed reaction that happens, right? Like in the moment, I don't think it. Then I'll like keep thinking about it later, or something will come up, and then and suddenly something that one of you has said will pop up into my head and be like, oh God, I was totally wrong about that. Like, now I get it. Like now I understand what they meant.
I'm not really a behavioralist anymore.
Like it's like two, like it'd be like 2 days later, I'll be like, oh yeah, that's
Yeah, and I just, I mean, I think it's you know, as we talk about kind of the leadership, and I think in some ways, leadership, not from an organizational perspective, but what this movement needs moving forward. I think it's interesting that ability, and I think this is what the trauma has taught me, is about how to be present, how to be in the moment while bringing in all the skills and knowledge at the same time. And that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. With that. So it's a challenge for all of us. And I think, again, as Jerry said, making sure we don't water this down so it's so generic, because I think the power of this is in some of the details about the neurobiology, epigenetics, and other things, is we understand human beings in a whole different way, which I think is really fascinating and opens up a lot of new possibilities for how we deliver services and care. And you know, being open to both those things and realizing, as Kurt gave us again, you know, sometimes we're wrong. You know, sometimes those assumptions are what we learned in school, you know, science evolves and we how do we integrate that new learning? One of the other questions I had for you both is, I know we're all constantly reading, listening to books, podcasts, watching documentaries. I just, maybe somehow how it relates to trauma, but I just kind of wonder if you look back at this year and the stuff that you've read and what you've learned, if anything in particular really sticks out for you. You know, that doesn't have to be something, a new scientific discovery or anything, but anything that has really crafted or directed your thinking in a different way that you've learned this year.
I have a couple actually that pop in the head almost immediately, and both of them were, one of them was, I forget the author of the book, the title of it was The Coaching Habit. Mm. And the other one was about, I think the title of it was called The Power of Questions. Those are two that have popped out to me really a lot this past year, and have been really helpful in a like practical application sense. Because on one side of it, those two books gave me some specific questions to ask in certain situations that I wouldn't have thought of before. So some really kind of nuts and bolts, like nitty gritty kind of details that were really helpful. And then also from just kind of a conceptual standpoint, the idea of how powerful asking questions can be, and asking the right question at the right time can be to moving things forward. And oftentimes, trauma treatment is so much about getting people unstuck, and questions are just a really powerful way of doing that. And so that those two books kind of hit on that for me a lot this year. They were great. They're pretty easy reads and short, and you can get through them really quickly. And to me, they were really powerful books. I enjoyed both of those.
Can you give those titles again?
Yeah, one was The Coaching Habit.
Coaching Habit.
And the other was, I think it was called the Power of Questions.
Great. Well, we'll throw those links up there on the show notes as well. Jerry, what about you?
You know, I got, first thing that comes to my mind is I got to watch a series from the National Institute of Clinical Application of behavioral health or something like that, behavioral medicine. And it was a master series on trauma. And it had people like Pat Ogden and Peter Levine and Bessel van der Kolk, Ruth Lanius, a number of people that were doing a similar thing that we're doing. And kind of each of them coming from their own perspective. And what I gleaned from that is, one is the complexity of this, this topic, that there's constantly research and re-looking at it. But also, how much we don't really, we still don't really know, right? Is that, which is a really both humbling but also exciting, is that we really are learning more and more about how trauma is stuck in people's bodies, how trauma influences what we pay attention to in the environment, and also the meaning we put to those, both consciously and unconsciously, right? And so when we are dealing with a client, how important it is to both listen to them, but also be with them and observe them, right? That it's so much of what they gets communicated is non-verbally, both from our clients to us and us back to our clients, right? And so over this year of how important it is, whether it's I'm doing therapy or I'm doing a consultation or a training, how important it is for me to stay mindful of what's happening inside of me as I present something. Also, sometimes when I am at a conference and somebody asks a question, there are times I realize I respond to the question based on how I heard it, and the person's face is like, well, that's not even the question I asked. I
didn't even ask you that.
Right?
Well, my answer's brilliant.
Right. And that's really, but I think of how often that happens in meetings with people, how often that happens in interactions.
Yeah.
And you take it through your own filter, and it's like, that's exactly what I heard you say, right? So I think as I learn more about trauma, it also challenges me to learn more about myself. And I think that that's the greatest learning, that my time for when I do my meditation or when I do my Tai Chi, when I'm trying to have the different relationship with myself, that I could be open to some of those things that come out of me that might be influencing the clients that I'm working with. So I think that's the most important piece, is how do I continue growing in my own self-awareness and my own reflective capacities, so that I could be better at providing both the training, but also the relational interactions that are required to help to create the space for healing.
Great. Yeah.
I think too, some of our listeners have been a little bit of a part of watching that happen with us, right? Because we have these discussions and constant kind of debates about trauma-informed versus behavior analytic, and how do we talk about those two things. And one of the things I gained from that is, like, I'll gain from my conversations with either of you points at where I'll say something, as use a word or a phrase, and it means something completely different to you than it does to me. Like, totally different. And I wouldn't know that unless we could really dive into that conversation and have a comfortable enough relationship that you can go, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I'm, you know, Matt smiling because he loves to be the devil's advocate. And, like, that's his whole thing, right? That somebody's got to push the system. Matt's taking that on to hit that mantle on himself in a lot of ways. And so that's a fun experience to have, to be able to dig into that and finally get to a point where we can both go, oh, I get what you're saying, or here's how that, here's the words that I use that mean that. And that takes some, it takes some real effort to do that. And so I think that's one of the things that is pretty enjoyable about being a part of this group, is that we have chances to do that. And I think that's a real step forward in getting multiple perspectives, as you said, Jerry, like how important that is. And I think each one of our perspectives is a really, has really important components to making sure that people get good experiences, and that we can create good places where people are not only not re-traumatized, but they have positive, repetitive, rewarding experiences that can move them forward. And I think that point about multiple perspectives is not, can't be understated.
Yeah. And part of my smile is the keynote that we did. There was a great moment where Kurt used a little behavioral language and said, I'm very aroused right now. And me and everybody else in the crowd thought one thing. And if you didn't know Kurt, you might wonder about this dude up there. And so I got a chance to go talk about how a shared language is important to understanding one another, which is one of my favorite moments of 2000.
Right. So Kurt, what you did is you presented an ambiguous stimuli and Matt projected his own meaning to that experience, right? And blamed it on you.
That's right. Right. I just have to get my mind out of the gutter so Matt's going to roll by.
Right.
It's good to clarify for the audience. Just in case they're like me and have that mind. Right.
Like 2 weeks ago, I was in a meeting, there was a person in that meeting that I had never met before, and we were doing introductions, and I knew he was at that conference, and so we shook hands and said, yeah, nice to meet you, and he goes, oh yeah, you're the aroused guy.
So you see what they took from the presentation.
That's the only thing.
The aroused guy.
A lot of learning, right?
Yeah. I agonized over that presentation for days, and that's what they remember.
Yes. I had to help him a little bit. That's kind of, it's like, oh, this is a good chance.
Yeah. Well, you did provide a few more repetitions of that.
Great. I just like to add my 2 cents for, I think a thing that keeps popping up on my radar from multiple angles is the concept, and I know I've talked about this before, of wellness. And how, to get to healthy brain functioning, what are some of those components? And for folks with trauma, it may mean pretty intensive mental health interventions. It may mean getting them into housing. But there's also just this, I think, in many ways, very cheap and sensible supplemental approaches, dietary approaches, exercise. You go back to those basics, getting good sleep, that I see as a real, more and more as a foundational piece to any healing and recovering process. And in some ways, it's so simple, and we all know we should be doing some of this stuff. But, whenever I look at, what's one of the big predictors of people being healthy at work or performing at their best? Well, it's getting 8 hours of sleep at night. It's eating a healthy diet. It's exercising, 5 or so times a week. That's becoming more and more of central to my thinking is, what are some of the really basic but fundamental things, whether, again, we're talking about self-care, whether we're talking about helping someone heal from severe traumatic experiences. Again, a question that is just ongoing in my head from my research this year is that if you're not eating well, sleeping well, exercising, some of the, again, those basic things, practicing mindfulness in a trauma-informed way, just put that asterisk there, are we really kind of working upstream with some of this stuff? And if we made some of these life changes that, maybe a little bit more difficult depending on your social economic status, but really relatively are less expensive than most interventions, could they be a great supplement to the healing process? So that's an ongoing thing. Of course, I went out and got all the student loan debt in education, and now I'm interested in diet and exercise. So Yeah, luckily there's plenty out there to read. So that's sort of my ongoing fascination with, you know, these little pieces that are part of that puzzle as well. So, you know, I kind of like to look at, what do you think when you look ahead to 2019, what are you looking forward to? Well, what's something out on the horizon that you see that you're kind of maybe hope will happen a little bit, or that you're kind of looking forward to in the upcoming year? What gets you excited about the new year?
Jerry,
Kurt, go ahead.
Are you thinking, how big are you thinking?
You can go as big as you want.
Or how small are you thinking?
You're going to have multiple. This is kind of the wish part of the prime. Maybe you wish you would happen, or maybe even something that's tangibly on your radar as well.
For me this year, I have a really big focus on incorporating biological measures into applied work. And I'm focused really pretty hard on that right now. In one of our programs, really providing care to adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, which I think has been really fun to do that with a cross-section of the population that has, one, some challenges with cognitive ability. And so you have some limitations that you can use cognitive interventions or interventions that are based around language. And so being able to use some physiological markers around that is really exciting to do. And we're getting some really fun little success stories that are coming up. So I'm really excited about that. And I think we're right poised at a point that I think we're gonna have some really cool data that we'll be able to share with a wider audience. And so I'm really jazzed about it. I'm really having a great time with that and super excited.
Very cool. Jerry, what about you?
You know, what's exciting to me is the state of Colorado through the CU of Boulder, they got a grant through the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. And what they have is putting together an advisory board to kind of look at all the training around the state of Colorado around who's doing trauma-sensitive schools and what's going on, and really trying to figure out what are the key issues that really need to be addressed. There's so many different trainings, there's so many different initiatives, and really looking at bringing together, I was with in the group, there was somebody from Kaiser Permanente who's kind of funding a number of these projects to kind of look at. So, you know, I think about, just like everything else, when these things come up, schools spend a lot of money, treatment centers, what are the key issues that really need to be addressed, and how do we make sure that we're disseminating the information to people in a economically efficient and manageable way, right? It's like they're kind of looking at that. So I am excited a little bit about being part of this kind of large systems, kind of look at some of these issues. At the same time, I'll continue doing training and kind of looking at it. But I think we really need to kind of, as a lot of this information is coming into the state, and we want to have more of an integrated system of care, we've got to make sure there's some overlap between what it is people are actually getting and what the people need. And so this committee is really doing some work, and there's some really bright people. So it's kind of like another example of sitting on a committee and listening to what other people and other perspectives. So I'm excited at this stage in my career to kind of not only thinking about an individual child or an individual program, but really looking at the system. and working with how to improve child welfare, how to improve the educational system. That's really exciting to me at this stage of my career.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the system stuff, I got forward, actually Christy Chambers, who was a guest on our autism special that we had a while ago now, forwarded me something that the Lieutenant Governor of Utah is dedicated to creating Utah as a trauma-informed state. So it just is really cool to see the language, and it was kind of good. It's like, okay, what's this mean? You know, that was kind of his first, tell me what this would mean if we become, so it wasn't like, okay, I'm going to tell you what this means, but really that kind of mindful approach to leadership is, hey, I want to do this. I'm not a psychologist. I'm dedicated to doing this. This is going to be one of my focuses. What does this mean to you? Which I think is a nice thing from the policymaker perspective. So I think my bright, shiny thing sort of on the horizon here is I was just working on this today, finally, after I haven't had a whole lot of time to put new words on a paper recently due to my travels. But hopefully at some point, maybe in the summer, if things go well, and I can keep my marriage strong while trying to write a book with my wife, is to get this trauma-sensitive school book out. And, you know, it's just been so much fun with, like, connecting paradigms to have, you know, people that I've never met, never would have met, but somehow found me on Amazon and liked the book. And just to kind of watch that, you know, a handful of people buy it every day who I have no clue who they are. The other really cool thing that happened this year is Texas Christian University, their social work program, utilizes it as part of their curriculum now, which was a huge, you know, honor as well. So I think they're the horn toads or whatever, horn frogs. So go TCU, you know. But I'm really excited because I think, again, and we've kind of talked about this throughout too, is getting this in schools to me is such an upstream solution to the problems of homelessness, addiction, HIV, and other things that we talk about week in and week out. If we can get these kids identified and get them the help and hopefully get their families the help that they need early on, so they don't have to carry the pain of trauma for decades along with them. I'm just so excited about what that would mean for our communities, what that would mean for people's lives, what that means, hopefully, that we can, like I said, we can invest a couple more dollars in schools and stop building prisons and homeless shelters and treatment centers. That if we get those things up there, and I know it's not going to eliminate all trauma in the world. I know it's not going to eliminate all criminal behavioral addiction, but it's exciting to kind of think about. And the fun thing about writing stuff down in book form is you really have to think through it many, many times over until you almost hate the material, but you get to know it in a different way. And so I'm really excited, and it's fun to do it with my wife. All these conversations we've had about kids for the 10 years of our marriage and 15 plus years of our relationship are making it down on paper. So that's the thing that I'm really excited about this year, as well as, you know, I've got a really full winter and spring coming up with a lot of fun trainings as well. So hopefully a new resource to get out there sometime, maybe late summer, depending on how the whole publishing thing goes. So, but excited about that. Any other final words as we wrap up 2018 and go into 2019?
I got one question for both of you. So you can pick which one of you wants to go first, but I'm curious and interested in your perspective as people who do more training than I do and actually are exposed to more organizations than I am and more environments than I am, since I work at, you know, at one place and I do a little bit of training, but that's not my full-time job. So from that perspective, you think about, I guess the metaphor I'll use is kind of the raising all boats. Like, as the water level increased, essentially, in raising the level of skill and raising the level of awareness in a meaningful way that lasts more than fill it up a little bit and then the water drops, you know, that can get you to train in one organization, you can train and then people turn over and that training is gone and you have to do it again. And so if that question makes sense, I'm wondering your perspective on it. about, like, has the watermark been raised, you know, in the last 5 years, 10 years, as you travel around the country and within Colorado at different organizations? I wonder your perspective on that.
Yeah, I'll take a first shot at it. I'd love to hear Jerry, because I know he's been doing it longer than I have. But, you know, it's interesting because I think, like I said, at this conference, and it's not just this conference, it's other ones I go to as well, is, you know, nobody's kind of looking for the 101 trauma anymore, where we're looking at the sort of those next steps. And I take that overall as a really good sign. Again, I think we started off the conversation with some of the hesitations we have with that. But, you know, if everybody just at least knows about, like, the ACE study, for example, I think there's some real benefit in that. Now, it may not be as much as we want it to be. It may not, you know, if you only get 3 hours of training, it may not be what we would love for you to get in a day or two of training. But, you know, what I really hope is that, you know, on one hand, Kurt, that we're getting this out into the service delivery environment where people from different organizations can sit down at the table and have a talk about trauma and not have to go back and say, oh, well, there was this study done in the mid 90s in San Diego, California. And, you know, so we can pick up the conversation a little further along the way. The other hope that I really have too is that if, you know, and I still don't think necessarily the majority of people that we kind of talk about holistically in the helping educational medical professions, criminal justice, have gotten this in a meaningful way yet. So there's still a lot of work of introduction to do. But as it is more prevalent out there, what I hope and what I see as well is I can talk to people that are way up in federal government, for example, at the conference I was in, they now know about trauma-informed care. They now know about trauma. And so my hope is that for each provider that I talk to who has been introduced to this, they've also talked to their spouse, partner, and best friend about it as well. And so that residual effect is what I hope eventually, and I think 2019 might be a big year for this, is not only will it spread and keep spreading in a meaningful way, hopefully more than a, you know, just a superficial way throughout the service provision industries we talk about, but also that we get this knowledge out there in the wider community. So my hope is that hopefully within the majority of voters understand this, we can start to see some of the policies that don't make sense in light of this research and start to, you know, address those as well. So, you know, kind of that twofold. You know, I think the boats are rising, but I hope the boats that I don't see are also rising out there as well.
You know, good news and bad news, right? The good news is there's increased awareness and discussion at all levels around this stuff. I think some of the bad news that I see is that we haven't really made a significant shift in that the research, you know, that's coming, that the Child Trauma Academy, led by Dr. Bruce Perry, they've collected thousands of assessments from across around the world to kind of, so they have a large database. And what that data is beginning to tell us is that an individual who has a really chaotic, neglectful, threatening experience in the first 2 months of life, and then is moved to somebody place and they have positive experiences, as opposed to somebody who has a really good early life experiences and then is exposed to bad experiences. The person who's had those early life negative experiences fares far worse, even though you only had 3 months of bad experiences, but you had it during this critical period. So if we just look at ACEs without understanding how significant early relational experiences are and getting mothers proper care, dealing with the issue of housing, dealing with the issue of food insecurity, dealing with the issue of access to medical care. Some of the things that as a society, we haven't really changed. We still are wanting to kind of count aces of people and treat them later on. So I hope as we move forward, that we can change some of these policies, that we realize that helping, creating healthy communities, having access to medical care, having access to food, having access to housing, all of these issues are going to, in some ways, create a healthier society. Mm-hmm. Is that really addressing these things later on, and we're getting better at it to do it, is a good step. But it really is not going to change the tide of people coming there until we really take these social issues as really significant and make a change in them. So I'm excited that I'm running around the country educating people to how to better create a healthier, safer environment. But I also don't want to take the heat off of people to say, we need to address some of these social issues head on in our communities in order to make significant change.
Right, I mean, there's two ways of thinking about that, right? You can use ACEs and understand the impact of ACEs to help you going forward to treat somebody differently. And then the other side of that is, how do we, on a larger scale, reduce the number and prevalence of ACEs?
Right. So I'm both excited about some of the change, but also really motivated to keep the heat on our and say these issues that people are dealing with, you know, whether it be immigration, whether it be in our communities, really these are important issues that, you know, really the next generation of people growing up and coming and taking control in from a political standpoint have to take. That what happens in Ohio impacts what happens in Florida. What happens in Florida impacts what happens in Scotland. I mean, the world is really, some of the issues are really pretty significant in terms of our survival as a species.
I love that Jerry wrote us out on a social justice message. Boy, I love it. I kind of hurt my words, Kurt, coming out of Jerry's mouth there. Did you catch that?
You're going to have to reframe your whole list of bright, shiny objects for 2018 now.
I know. He dropped it at the end like he always does. But I think that's a great message to end this year with. And I just want to thank both Kurt and Jerry for a great year. This is, again, episode 66. It's been a fun journey that I've learned a lot. I also want to thank our audience as well. We get some great emails. It's hard to kind of get data on podcasts, so you never know. But I tell you, one of the coolest things in my career is folks coming up that I've never met before and say, you know, I love the podcast, which is really fun. So I know Jerry doesn't like the fame, but I'll still get a big head every once in a while around it. And then I'll breathe and be present and mindful in the situation.
Just don't have your head come in my box on this.
So I just want to thank everybody out there for listening. Again, you can find resources, contact us. I'll put the links to the books that Kurt mentioned. And one of them was called Ask More, actually, and the other Coaching Habits. But I'll put those links on traumainformedlens.org. You got discussion questions up there, videos, all that fun stuff. So thanks for listening, and we'll pick up on heart rate variation and variability in 2019. So we will see you soon. Take care.